T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
They must have been down. Well, it's, I guess theoretically they could have been tied, but I don't remember it specifically. I could certainly go look it up, and in fact, I may. You know what? Hey, when you said Tyus Edney, all right, that play where he went coast to coast, somebody else went coast to coast before him, and it was incredible at the time, and it was Danny Ainge.
I remember that.
Notre Dame in the NCAA tournament, I want to say. It was BYU against Notre Dame, and Danny Ainge went the length of the court, and like I want to say he zigzagged through about three or four Notre Dame defenders. And I can't remember if he got a layup or a jumper out of it, but it was absolutely incredible. Absolutely.
I just remember seeing the highlights for that, Chasky. Here's one on the text line from the 510, and – nobody talks about this shot enough to me, just being a kid. And I'm referencing this because the other night on NBA TV, they were showing Game 7 between the Knicks and Lakers when the Knicks won the championship, the Willis Reed game.
And
Walt Frazier, a little before his time, Walt Frazier just went absolutely berserk in that Game 7. But Jerry West hit a 44-foot shot at the buzzer Game 6 of the finals to send it to overtime. And, like, nobody – think about that, Shasky and Stardy. The dude hit a 44-footer to sit at the overtime. Like, that's got to be up there. And I know they lost the game, and it just contradicts what I just said. But that is an all-time shot right there. What's on your list, Shasky?
Oh, no, sorry. Nash is all up in my ear. I thought he was talking to just me. I apologize. Sorry, gentlemen.
Well, what was he saying?
Well, no, he was saying one that was already on my list. It's like, dude, relax. We're going to get there, Nash. It's okay. Let the moment play itself out.
Let him lie. He stays stealing content from me.
God, I hate that guy.
I mean, one of the great moments in basketball history, because everybody was rooting against the Lakers, is the Sacramento Kings series against the Lakers with Robert Horry, where the ball bounces back out to him.
Nash is in my ear about that. Obviously, Nash wants that mentioned up there. And it was
Robert
Horry
hit like – he hit
God,
a bunch
I hate
of
that
shots.
Guy.
And I would say that the Lakers, the one that I think is even more dramatic than that one was the Derek Fisher shot, right? Wasn't the Derek Fisher shot more dramatic than even the Robert Horry one, even though I don't think they went on to win the championship that year with Peyton and Malone?
Yeah, 0.4 seconds left, fellas.
Yeah.
Horry's was more clutch.
Yeah. I'm looking at the I'm looking at that Michael Jordan game 6.
What's the final score,
Stanley? 87-86.
Yep.
So let's run through it real quick. I think it's – make sure Joe's right. John Stockton, with 41 seconds to go, makes a three to put the Jazz up 86-83 with 41 seconds.
Wow.
Chicago takes a timeout. Michael Jordan makes a two-point layup at the rim in 4 seconds. So I got to believe the Jazz let down there a little bit, right? They had to. They probably were like, no threes. And they gave him a two. And then, yep, turnover by Karl Malone with 18 seconds. Lost ball, steal by Michael Jordan. 5 seconds to go. Michael Jordan makes a two-point shot from 17 feet to put the Bulls up one. And then Stockton missed a 25-footer that was right on line, actually. After that, but no, see, yeah, that was they were down one.
Yeah, I remember.
They were down one at the time, and he made a steal and then a shot.
Yep. Wow. I'll never forget that score, 87-86, the Pulster. And I forgot they were down four with 41 seconds left because I was remember
three,
being a kid,
three.
Like, damn, three, down three, yeah. Excuse me. And I remember being a kid, like, damn, we're going to get a game seven. And I don't know if Jordan's going to be able to do this because Utah was, man, they were just into the Bulls' grill. The last year of that three-peat, we always talked about the Warriors, how many games they played, how many games they played in the June during this five-year run. That Bulls team was older. They were tired. They were gassed. They had just went seven with the Pacers in the Eastern Conference Finals. Man, if Jordan doesn't hit that shot, I think, boy, I think the Jazz may have stole that NBA championship.
Well, that game probably would have been in Utah, too. That was probably when they were doing 2-3-2.
Yeah, no doubt. It was 2-3-2 format.
Our main man, Steiny. Kyle, the producer, saying Iguodala's free throws at OKC to send the game into overtime. I think that was a regular season game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
A regular season game is more important than an all-star game, though. So if we're ranking those things.
I actually
the Warriors were trying to win 73, and it was a back-and-forth game. I don't know. Just throwing it out there.
Basketball court by yourself with the 24 greatest players in the game, and they're all watching you, and the whole country's watching you. And you got to make two fouls. You're down two. There's no room for error. Woo!
Yeah,
no,
and the win and loss doesn't count. If Iguodala misses the free throw, the Warriors lose that game.
No, and nobody remembers that loss, but everybody would remember Rolando Blackman missed the big foul shots with no time left. We'll agree to disagree. Ray Allen, Kyle has.
Oh, Ray I have Allen, Ray Kyle Allen. Has. You got to have game Ray six. Allen. Yeah. Yeah, not only that, LeBron missed a three earlier in that sequence. Bosch right. gets the rebound, kicks it out to Ray Allen, who's like backpedaling. He's doing the Sean Elliott. Remember that Sean Elliott shot from many years prior to the first one at all?
That shot should be on the list.
It absolutely should. But Ray Allen hits that bucket, sends the game to an overtime. They literally had the trophy like on the court. They were ready to do the celebration. We thought Miami was completely finished. That was unbelievable. I think it went to OT. I think that was the three to tie the game.
Yeah.
And then there was maybe another shot by the Spurs, but it went to OT, if I'm not mistaken. That was game six, not game seven, right?
Yep, game six, LeBron James. They were down 12 going into that fourth quarter in game six against the Spurs. And LeBron, that was a no-headband game. That was the first time I've ever seen LeBron James on the basketball court without a headband. He got his headband knocked off, and he decided not to play with it for the rest of the fourth quarter. And he actually carried the heat for most of that quarter. He made a big three, but then we all remember him missing a three before that Ray Allen game-tying three-pointer that sent it overtime. But that was definitely clutch, no doubt.
With Tim Duncan on the bench, and that's the first time you've seen Popovich get crushed by everyone.
Jordan over Craig Elo. That was a game five of a best of five, and they were down one on the road. So that's a pretty big one there, no doubt about it. Ray Allen. Chris Jenkins, Villanova, North Carolina, 2016 NCAA title.
But see, by your criteria, Steiny, it was a tie game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Valparaiso, Bryce Drew?
Bryce Drew, the first round. Yeah, that was good. That was good.
See, you know what? Somebody said there was – who was the guy from North – hold on.
Marcus
hold on.
Page. Marcus
yeah,
Page. Cart- he tied
oh, yeah, the
it.
Lefty.
Marcus Page, yeah, he had it was a crazy shot, too.
That's right.
He had to, like, double pump it, and he tied the game with that three, and then Chris Jenkins came down. Great play call by Jay Wright and Villanova, and Chris Jenkins just iced it, and confetti comes right down. It was crazy.
Since we're going down this road, Steiny, I want to ask you, because we brought it up. I brought it up on Friday, and no one has ever given me the actual answer for this one. Jordan hits the shot for North Carolina. That's where the beginning of this clutch gene, this greatness, all that story kind of starts there. Where the hell was James Worthy pretending to be on that play?
It's the greatest question of all time.
It makes no sense to me.
I mean, it's inexplicable. It is absolutely inexplicable what he was doing. And in a crazy kind of way, you know, Freddie Brown, you want to talk about a play that's going to lives with him forever. But you know what? As far as I'm concerned, James Worthy did that old trick on the basketball court that I used to hate when people did. Hey, right here. And you think it's your teammate. And it's a guy on the other team being a total, absolute jack. You know what I'm talking about? You know the guy. Yes. You know the guy I'm talking about.
It always happens.
But the funny thing is, Worthy didn't even have to do that. But he was like, I don't know why he was up there. Let's go to
Sam
Antonio.
Perkins on that team?
Sam Perkins was on that team, yeah.
How good was that team? I mean, my God.
Whew. Oh, Kane. Kane's in Oakland. What's up, Kane? How you doing, buddy? Good to hear from you.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? How y'all doing, man?
Doing well.
Okay. Well, Butcher Boy, I think, stole my one of mine with Ray Allen, because I was going to say he ain't hit the clutch one, man. Had the bottles out there ready for him to pop, and they couldn't do nothing. But I'm going to have to go with my consolation prize. I guess it's the Reggie Miller one, man, with him and Spike Lee with this battle and a little beat. Yeah.
7 seconds.
And he scored. Yeah, and he scored, like, what, 9 points in, like, 9 seconds or something, man?
Put the choke sign up on him.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Peter Vesey on the sidelines giving you commentary from the locker rooms and whatnot, and they were all talking about it. It was a Sunday morning here on the West Coast. NBC in the morning. I remember I was in my sweatpants in the living room watching that game, and I liked the Knicks back then. I hated Reggie Miller. I was rooting for the Knicks to win because I hated Jordan. I wanted the Knicks to be good. I loved Anthony Mason. I loved that team with Oakley in them. And, oh, my God, Reggie Miller was unbelievable in that game.
Hey, don't forget to download the Radio.com app whenever you get a chance. All you have to do is search 95.7 The Game, and you add it to your favorites, and you don't have to miss a second, whether you're at home, you're in your car, or you're at work. And use the rewind feature to catch any moments you missed from the last 24 hours. Or you can also just tell your smart speaker, hey Alexa, or hey Google, play 95.7 The Game. That way you can take 95.7 The Game with you anywhere you are.
See, I was a big Reggie guy. I wanted the Knicks to beat the Bulls and the Jordan Bulls, and they didn't get it done.
They blew a
2-0 lead in the 93 Eastern Conference Finals. They had home court advantage. And, of course, that's a series where Game 5, Charles Smith gets his shot repeatedly blocked there at the end of the game and swung that game back to Chicago. But Miller, when he came on the scene and he had that Game 5 where he threw the choke shine at Spike Lee, I go, oh, I'm all in on Reggie Miller. Who is this guy? Because we didn't get a lot of Pacer games here on the West Coast. Obviously, no league pass. Pacer games weren't really on TV quite yet. They had a few games here and there. But Reggie was like, that's when he won me over. And I was all in on Reggie against the Knicks over the next couple years.
And we used to see Antonio Davis at Kezar Pro-Am because he was a local guy.
Pro-Am.
And he would show up every summer for his a couple of games and whatnot. I never liked that Pacer team. And then when they got Mark Jackson, I couldn't stand them even more. And then they traded for Chris Mullin. And that devastated me. I loved Chris Mullin. The one guy I loved who was a Pacer forever, Rick Smits and Chuck Person. I loved the Rifleman. The Rifleman was my guy.
The Rifleman and the Dunking Dutchman.
Look at you.
The 650 says Dame Lillard over OKC versus OKC. Yeah, but you know what? See, that to me is exactly – there's no way he takes that shot if the game's not tied. There's no way. Right?
Yeah.
He knows he's got overtime in the back. I mean, I'm not saying it's not a huge shot. You know what I'm saying. But
do we overrate Dame?
I don't think so.
Nah, I give Dame his props.
I think he's pretty good.
I give Dame his props, man. The fact that he's saying that, hey, I want to stay in Portland, and we'll see how long that lasts, but Dame's a killer, man. Dame goes at it with guys, and he gets disrespected, and he just goes out there. And look, I know we're comparing him against Curry, and around these parts, it's a no-brainer. You're taking Curry, but Dame Dollar's a baller, man. Can you be a killer
if you don't play defense?
I mean, it's tough to play defense. Point guards are stacked. Does he play?
I'm just asking.
I mean, think about Curry. Who's better defensively?
I mean, I wouldn't even know, to tell you the truth.
Right.
I'd put them both in the same category, essentially.
It's tough to play defense in this league now. Like, a defensive point guard like the Patrick Beverley.
Is true.
I mean, that position is so stacked, you can't touch anybody. Guys are now shooting from 27 feet. It's almost unfair playing point guard in the NBA during these times as a defensive NBA point guard.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very difficult. All right, when we come back, hey, coming up in a half hour, apparently my sources are saying we're going to do something called the Shasky Shuffle. The Shasky Shuffle. That's at 1 o'clock. I'm anxious to hear about that. Anxious to hear about that. And that's what's coming up on 95.7 The Game. Stuff we've gotten into. Here's one thing that caught my attention over the weekend. And, you know, it's kind of interesting, even though we don't have sports per se, there's still sports news out there. And one of the things I thought was interesting, and I got to tell you, in a crazy way, I chalked it up as a positive for this guy, and it's Farhan Zaidi, the Giants general manager, did an interview where they were talking about the season and a condensed season and not playing 162 games and what if we had to play fewer games. And he basically said a shortened season could be an equalizer for the Giants. And I got to thinking, A, he's right, and B, I am at least glad that he's honest and upfront about where this team's at right now. Because you don't say something like that unless you know you're not very good and you're probably going to lose more than you're going to win. Because let's face it, shorter games, shorter seasons give worse teams a better chance to stay competitive.
No doubt. That's a great point. Gabe Kapler, new manager of the Giants, will join David Rado and Kolsky at 2:30 today, starting at Chester.
Nice.
So that'd be fun to hear what Gabe Kapler has to say about that, those comments from Farhan. But you look at it that way with the Giants, and you can look at it like that with the Warriors. Like, it's a lost year, but it happened in these circumstances, and a lot of guys got experience. That's how I'm looking at this Giants team. A lot of kids are going to get experience. At some point, Joey Bart will be called up. I think he was going to start the year in AAA Sacramento, according to Keith Law, expert on farm systems, ESPN. And I think it is a benefit to the Giants to play these condensed games, competitive games, and get that experience out there in what looks like it's going to be a lost season for the Giants.
So we had Dave Fleming on last Thursday night, and Dave Fleming is pretty much convinced that if they start around June or even later, Joey Bart's going to start up with the big league club because of the condensed schedule, and they don't really have a backup catcher right now. Not anyone that any of us could name or could point out in a crowd. Here's the other thing, guys. I don't think he was talking about being competitive. I really don't. I think he meant more watchability and attendance-wise,
when it comes
to the relevance of the team. That's what I think he was talking about. Because if you had to be subjected to, let's just say it's a normal summer, like last summer, think of how checked out everyone was of Giants baseball once we kind of figured out after the second week of August, you know, this team's going nowhere. They stink. The stadium was empty. No one was watching. Nobody could care. We were talking about Jimmy Garoppolo and what the Warriors were going to do now that Kevin Durant had left them. So I just think the way, if you're looking at like watchability right now, all of your fan base is so starving to watch Giants baseball, even if it stinks, if it's in a short amount of time, everyone's going to watch. And because we're not going to get fatigued out by an entire 6-month stretch, it's in like a 3-month stretch. This is like the best possible outcome for them to, you know, shine up this pig and put some lipstick on it. I think this is a great thing for the Giants.
Yeah. And I wasn't even looking at it, Joe, from that aspect, but you're right. Just the mere fact that baseball is going to be back, I think the Giants' record and how well they do is going to be secondary at that point.
Irrelevant.
Yeah, and what a year for that to happen. I didn't even think about that point. More what I was thinking about was we talked to Fleming too last week, and he was even saying, look, let's have a season even if it's only 50 games.
Yeah.
So you start, you know, then you start saying, okay, let's have a 60 game season. Well, I mean, hell, anybody can get hot for a month. You know what I mean? And I mean, the Giants start out 15-10, and guess what? They're in a pennant race. You know what I mean? So like, you know, it's a little tongue in cheek, but not really. I mean, that could be, I mean, if baseball can get started, which would be awesome, and let's say they could put together a 60-game schedule, to me, that's very interesting. You know, and I know what makes baseball special is 162 over the summer, I don't want to change that, but 60 games kind of just makes the best out of a bad situation. I'm all in.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm all in on that. 60 games, boy, I got to have at least – I got to have at least 100. I got to at least have 100. I mean, why? I mean, 60-game schedule, boy, that is – look, I would be happy with anything. I would be happy in anything. I argued with Steiny and Guru Shasky a few weeks ago about, you know, if the NBA came back and they would do best of three first-round series. And I went crazy. I went crazy. I didn't want anything to do with that. I'm saying if you're coming back, at least give me a best of five. But I get the circumstances. I get the times. And actually, it bothered me so much, I reached out to DeLon Wright, who we knew from City College of San Francisco, now playing with the Mavericks.
Pick that name
and
up.
He basically said, and he said, basically, he goes, man, I take anything at this point. I'll take anything. So 60 games is 60 games. But it would make things intriguing to where, man, you have some clubs where you got to get hot. Right? Like, think about the Yankees, for example. They're picked to win a World Series. They're picked to compete for a World Series. They've got all these injuries. What if you get one injury, you're screwed. You're done in a 60-game schedule. Your star pitcher goes on the DL, or the IL is what they call it now, and he goes on the IL, he's out for a month. Boom, you're done. I mean, things would get really, really wacky with the 60-game schedule.
The problem with baseball is the amount of inventory. It made sense in 1912 to have 162 games, and you travel from one town via the train, and you park your car, and you go to a hotel, and you stay for 5 days in a town. It's 2020, man. The things are changing so fast. It's about sense of urgency, and the reason why the NBA regular season and Major League Baseball in general are losing interest with everyone is because there's no sense of urgency. Now, I'm not saying 100, 90, 82. I don't know what the sweet spot is, but I do know this. 162 is antiquated, and the obsession with the history books and all those things, you know, it's doing a disservice to the growth of the game and its present stature amongst young people. It's just that simple. The game moves really slow. There's way too many games, and there's no sense of urgency, Bonta. And regarding the Yankees and the injury, they already lost Severino for the year. They need to make a move for a pitcher.
Well, yeah, no, I'm saying I'm making an example of, like, say if the Dodgers lost Walker Buehler or Clayton Kershaw, they go on the IL, or the Oakland A's, they lose their young studs, AJ Puck and Lizardo, and they lose them right away. Boom, you may be out of this baby. You don't have much wiggle room in a 60-game season. Now, 162, we were batting this around. Give me 144 games, but what Fleming was talking about, John Smoltz talked about, yeah, absolutely 144. Why not? Look, John Smoltz and Dave Fleming brought this up. Dave Fleming brought it up with us, and then Smoltz brought this up a few years ago. Having a first half and second half champ, making the races, what they do in the minor leagues, a split schedule, I'm all in for that. I'm all in for more doubleheaders during the week.
So you're in for more George Contoses of the world stepping on the bump and pitching instead of the premier players. Because if you shorten the schedule, you get more premier players actually playing. As it is right now, Buster Posey plays 2 days and then he's off for 2 days. I'm sorry. Like that's not a good business model for the consumers. If I'm going to spend the amount of money that I want to spend with my family to go see the Giants, hell yeah, I want to make sure Buster Posey's in there. And I don't want the George Contoses of the world playing in every single game. When you have 162 games, that means you have 9 innings times 162, which means you have to have that many people out there feeding and building up these innings. It's just, it's a waste of time, and it made sense back in the day. It's 2020. I need sense of urgency. Steiny, am I wrong here?
I don't know. I you know, Guru is on the side where he doesn't want anything changed, and if people can't deal with it, and I'm saying, well, then your business models in big trouble. I think they've got to, yes, I think baseball needs to do something to speed up the game. I don't know if that's going to make me like baseball any more, though, than I already do, or less than I already do. But, you know, baseball's struggling, but I'll be honest, I don't know what the answer really is.
I mean, like, they're trying to do this whole pitch count thing, or what is it, the clock they have between pitches and
the three-batter limit was coming in.
Yeah, you know what? And how much is that? What is that going to save us? 3 minutes?
I agree.
Is that
going to
save us 3 minutes out of our life? Like, come on, man. We're nitpicking on seconds, and the beauty of it is these long stare downs between pitches. You know, a 2-2 count in game 6 of the NLCS, and the guy is up there sweating bullets. Like, those games are going to take long. And then the commercial aspect. businesses, sponsors are going to buy into the product, especially when you get to the postseason. So the games are going to be long then, too.
Yeah,
so
I don't, but no I don't, one like, complains in November. Nobody complains in November. It's the Tuesday night in June that goes till 2 in the morning. How many Giants games last year went until after midnight? Way too many.
Isn't that what makes baseball baseball, though? When you get these long games and you get the occasional random 16-inning game. Like, that's fun to me.
We have an epidemic, and let's be honest here, and that baseball does not want to admit. They have a arm and shoulder epidemic amongst the young players who are playing the game. And when you have 162 games, you have a requirement of fulfilling those innings pitched by someone. And when you have guys, let's just throw out two names, for example, the Oakland A's. They have Lazardo and Puck. If you give me a condensed schedule, a condensed season, there's no way in hell they're hitting that 150 pitch inning limit. Like, there's just no way in hell. Would I rather have the Strasburgs of the world finishing the season out with a shorter schedule or them not being able to pitch in the playoffs because I'm worried about the long-term viability of this kid I want to invest $150 to $300 million into? Like, it's bigger than the Tuesday night game in June.
I'm a diehard
baseball fan.
But I hear you. But doesn't that start in the youth leagues? Doesn't that start in little leagues?
Of course it does.
Doesn't that start in college? So how's that Major League Baseball's problem when these guys do finally come up and they go out there in April and they're throwing 100 and boom, they got to have Tommy John?
Because ones investing the money into these guys, Bonte.
I hear you, but it starts, I think, at a younger age where these guys are having these kids, these little league teams, are having kids throw curveballs. I mean, it's ridiculous. They're throwing multiple curves. I went to a little league game a couple years ago and a guy was throwing heat, and there was a parent who's just like, he was just like, this ain't good. So I think it's got to start from, you know, as opposed to other sports where you say you got to start from the top, you got to start from bad. It's just like AAU, for example. AAU, these kids are playing multiple games a day, so by the time they come to the NBA, these guys got like 30-year-old knees for playing all these games in AAU. I think it starts at a young age. I don't think that's baseball's fault entirely.
First off, little leagues now have it mandated. You can only pitch 75 pitches a game. There's a lot of leagues out there, the majority of them, is that you can't throw breaking balls until you're 13 or 14 years old. Like, I think that the game has changed a lot at the youth levels. Now, are there certain leagues out there that are doing cavalier things? Absolutely. Like, that would be naive of me to say. But those places are not the entities investing hundreds of millions of dollars into these guys. All right? And when you have the totality of the season, like, every single year you hear the exact same thing. Well, Sean Anderson's never pitched this deep into his career. Well, it's because he's playing at a professional level. It's starting baseball in February and trying to finish somewhere in September. The season is way too long. And if you're looking at just how the game is played from a pitcher, you need to have pitchers. If you condense the calendar, you're allowing these arms to rest. Because they have a full calendar, someone's got to pitch. That's not just the Little League's fault. It's also Major League Baseball's.
This is the idea I had, but also Raider Brian also has it. He also says great show. Raider Brian saying great show. And this is one where I get it'll never happen, but I think, and it's because of history, but it's what I would do. Seven inning games. Yeah. It's what you play in Legion. It's what you play coming up most of your life until you get to the minors. I mean, that would kind of change, like, to me, going to seven innings would change everything, but it would also kind of keep everything the same.
Sure, you would, I agree.
You know, you would have to
game too.
Exactly. And yeah, I get it. What's going to happen is your starter's going to go five innings. You're going to bring in your setup man in the sixth and your closer in your seventh. I get all that, but it's like the trade-off is maybe your great pitchers and your stars play more.
Exactly.
Or on the field more. Maybe, obviously the game drops in time by a half hour at least. But I just don't think anybody, that's too abrupt of a shift, I think, for people to go for it, even though I think it's a great suggestion.
Well, maybe you have catchers playing more day games after night. If you do the seven inning thing, because it sounds like that's what we're talking about, Buster Posey. The reality of it is, yeah, he's probably not going to play a day game after night, no matter the circumstances. But if you do a seven inning game, okay, maybe he does play, or maybe he is available to catch in the third inning, or he starts off the game, and then in the fifth inning, you switch him to first base or whatnot. I don't know, but I do. I can get with seven inning games. If that's what people are complaining about, the time of games, you know, being out there late or whatnot, then make it seven innings. Make it seven innings, but don't radically change the amount of games. And here's the thing too, you think the owners are going to agree to drop the schedule from 162 to say 100? There's no way in hell they're going to do that because of the gate. They're already struggling with gates and attendance problems.
Yeah, but if you did that, just hear me out on this. If you did that, then you would eliminate a month of the season where teams like the Florida Marlins, it's least cost effective to actually open the stadium up during September and October and August when they've been mathematically eliminated since July 31st, right? Like, it literally, they are getting 5,000 fans a day. Just go back and look. It's not every team.
The Marlins are exceptions. Yeah, no doubt. They've always struggled with that, though.
There's a lot of teams that struggle with that. The Oakland A's are struggling with that right across the bay. So it's not like just because the Yankees and the Red Sox have unbelievable fans and they're going to constantly sell out no matter what. That is not necessarily the business model for baseball. The business model for baseball is television, local television rights. And that's how they sell this thing. What I would say is, hey, if we expand the playoffs and we give more sense of urgency games, you're going to have more advertisement dollars on the back end of that schedule than you will during the regular season of that schedule. This is all about building the television product for baseball. It's not about the in-game experience. It's not about season ticket holders. This is about the television product of baseball. Everyone agrees. October and November baseball on television is unbelievable. How can we expand that? And this is the blueprint. Eliminate parts of the regular season, expand the playoffs, and make more sense of urgency games and include more fan bases.
Yeah, I mean, the question to me is, will we see a kind of a radical change in our lifetime? Like, in the next 20 years, will something in baseball be way different than it is right now? And you could argue that a minimum three batters pretty drastic. Yeah. I'm even thinking about something, you know, to me that's going to tinker with the time of games. I'm wondering if there's anything kind of bigger than that we're going to see in our lifetime.
Yeah, I think there will, because everybody's complaining about the sport. Whenever I hear people talk about baseball these days, they're complaining about the game of baseball. They're not enjoying it because of, oh, it's too long. Oh, it's always a reason. It's always a reason to why they can't find any positivity to it. You know, even when you're watching the games and guys get hit with the pitch because they're bat flipping, people complain about that. People complain about how certain guys wear hats. Whatever baseball, it's like negative. Everything with baseball is negative. So I do think there's going to be a radical change, because everybody complains about it every single day. If it ain't this, it's that. If it's that, it's this. All this stuff about baseball is complaining. And it's just like, all right, you're not going to make the game faster. Guys are still going to take their time walking to the batter's box. Pitchers are still going to move off the bumper a little bit and play with the ball and doctor it up. It's going to happen. Like, that's just what baseball is. I just think people, the cool sport is basketball and football. And you see, and even as Shasky knows this, when you look at youth baseball, think about how much it costs to buy the equipment for baseball: bats, gloves, cleats, paying for these leagues. Guys just aren't into it anymore. And let's put the right on the table. How many kids do you see out there playing strikeout, playing rundown? I don't see it at all in my neighborhood. I don't see it at all. I mean, I don't know about you, Shasky. Maybe you see it more because you're out there, but I don't think the interest level in baseball is there. If you do make these radical changes, I don't think it's going to change in terms of the ratings, in terms of the revenue. I think baseball's kind of – here's the thing. I think baseball could become more like boxing and horse racing in the next 30 years, to where people just don't give a damn about it.
I don't see it ever reaching those status. I just did the opening day. This was before the coronavirus thing hit. I did opening day for Little League here in San Francisco. I was like the host of opening day for the Little League here in San Francisco. And they have the largest number of participants this year than they've ever had. They saw the biggest spikes, obviously, in growth for Little League when the Giants won the World Series. I mean, that's super obvious. Everybody knows that. But here's the problem, is that when I was growing up and I played baseball all through high school and whatnot, we would just go to the park and a bunch of guys brought their glove, brought their bat, and we just played organically. Kids don't play organic baseball. And what ends up happening, because it's now a travel sport, everybody has to have massive amounts of money so that they can go to Salinas, they can go to Sacramento, they can go to Stockton, go to Vegas, and play in all these tournaments. You're seeing the same thing in AAU basketball. Problem with AAU basketball is there's only a handful of great players, and so someone pays their way. In baseball, everyone's got to have a glove, a cleat, a bat. They've got their own helmet now with lice issues and things like that. We never had those things. We had one helmet. Everybody shared it. Everybody had one glove. Now you have a specialized glove for each position. It's a very niche sport, and in many ways, it reminds me a whole lot of golf and the way golf gets perceived. But here's the thing with baseball that I think we're all like neglecting to bring up. It is so obsessed with its history and its numbers. It is way too rigid to ever want to change. It's the only sport where they care more about the number of Babe Ruth and the Hank Aaron and this than they do about their own future. And that's where they're completely blinded. They need to worry about the future. The NFL is constantly evolving. The NBA is constantly evolving. The only real dramatic rules on the field that have changed is lowering the mound. And that happened in the early 60s. I mean, think about that.
Yeah. Speaking of the 60s, Al Kaline passed today. Al Kaline, Hall of Famer, former Detroit Tiger. Al Kaline, 85. Damn. Al Kaline. He was good.
Wow.
He was very good. Hey, rest in peace. Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, is he the great, one of the great Detroit Tigers of all time? Ty Cobb, him. I mean, who else you got in that list? You got Harmon Killebrew in there?
Well, he's a twin.
I thought he was a Tiger.
Yeah, Killebrew was a Minnesota twin.
Kaline is so underrated historically.
Yeah, Kaline is so good. Kaline's the probably the greatest Tiger, I would think. I'm trying to come.
Hank Greenberg was up there.
Although you know what,
Greenberg, don't forget about him.
Alan Trammell in his day was
won a World Series.
You know, they had one of the, they had maybe the best team in baseball over a period of time. But Dodgers. Hey, you know what? Let me give me a sec to just. Real quick, I just want to run something by you. We got our board op, great man, James Pappas. James Pappas is here regularly, and he's taking some time off to be with his family. And if you if you listen to this show a lot, you know that he's a beer guy like me, and he works at a place called the Hop Grenade in Concord. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're struggling big time. The Hop Grenade is struggling like a lot of bars and restaurants, and they have just begun opening up to sell cans and growlers, and they have an online ordering system. You can go to hopgrenade.com. Just go to hopgrenade.com. You can see the beers they have, and then you can go pick it up when it's ready to be picked up. So they'll fill up your growlers with anything. They're open Tuesday through Sunday, starting at 11:30. And here's the lead that he buried. They'll have Pliny for the growlers. They'll have Pliny for the growlers. Hop Grenade Concord. If you're out, you live out that way and you're hankering for some beer, go get some takeout from Hop Grenade and do your local business a solid. All right, when we come back, let me tell you what's happening. Let me tell you what's happening. I'm not sure what's happening. I just know it's called the Shasky Shuffle.
What are we doing? Dance moves?
Basically,
is
Joe,
a dance move?
I'm going to throw it to you on the other side and you can take it from there. Okay.
Yeah, I'll explain on the other side.
All right, that'll be
brought. HGMZ, FM, and HD1, San Francisco, 95.7.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.